America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Oh, yes, we are back in your lives. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobio. It's the champ, Chris Algieri, and we are presented by PPV.com. PPV.com is the premier place to watch live pay-per-view events. We got one in the rearview mirror, Deontay Wilder. Thank you to everyone that joined me in the live interactive chat on Friday night, where we saw Deontay Wilder pick up a stoppage win over Tyrell Herndon. Everyone in the live chat, it was a fun time. We keep the party going. In July 19th, when we see Manny Pacquiao take on Mario Barrios, Fundora versus Tim Zhu in a rematch, Pitbull versus Fierro. It's going to be a stacked card that will be out in Vegas for that. Chris and I covering it for PPV.com. You'll be joining us in the live chat. And, of course, August 16th, Tank versus Roach. The two of them have been sparring on Twitter all weekend long. Tank, that's when you know Tank Davis is getting ready for a fight, is when he starts getting active on Twitter, deleting tweets, sending out tweets. That's when you know Tank is back in training mode. So those are all the big fights. Stream them to your phone, tablet, your big screen TV. PPV.com is the place to be with me and Chris Algieri, my friend and podcast co-host. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. Good boxing weekend. A lot of activity. You are actually out there. I was home for once, but good. It was nice. Friday night, Saturday night, watching the fights all night. It was late night, Saturday night. I'm still tired from that. I'm not as tired as you because you were flying yesterday, but still. It's a very, very, very late night over here on the East Coast. But all in all, good boxing weekend.
Yeah, I'm a little jet lagged, not going to lie. Flew back from L.A. yesterday. It's an all-day trip. New York, JFK is a freaking third world country. But I'm here and I'm ready to go. And I said, Chris, let's just get this going early while I still got the juices flowing from California. Yes, it was a huge weekend of boxing. We saw some unbelievable performances. Kid Schofield comes to mind. Zoto Ramirez, not an unbelievable performance, workmanlike.
No.
Big fights were announced. Devin Haney, Brian Norman, which we'll touch on. Deontay Wilder, Christian Mabili. Ben Eubank also announced. I was watching Wilder versus Herndon in the lobby, the Jake Paul fight lobby, with Rachel Donaire, Nonito Donaire.
Nice.
Jorge Capetillo, who is the former trainer of Tyson Fury and Chavez. Chavez was hanging out in the fight lobby all weekend in a winter jacket, just talking to anyone that would listen to him. Chavez Sr., man, does that guy have aura walking around.
Yeah.
He should have fought Jake.
Yeah, he would have fought harder, I'm sure. That's
good God.
Sure.
You want to start there? Let's start there.
Let's start there.
Jake Paul defeats Julio Cesar Chavez, unanimous decision. First seven rounds, Chavez did not throw any punches. It looked like a sparring session where Jake was just hitting a heavy bag. Final three rounds, action picked up. It was actually kind of fun. It was some back and forth. So Jake got rocked a few times. All in all, Jake gets the win. I thought his jab looked decent. I thought he landed 45% of his power shots, which was a really good number. I wish Chavez would have started his engine earlier, but you know what? The guy just doesn't have it anymore. If you watch the Uriah Hall fight on the Mike Perry-Jake Paul card, he got outthrown by Uriah Hall, who was an MMA fighter fighting for the first time in boxing. You remember his fight with Canelo Alvarez? He famously shelled up for 12 rounds. He doesn't have a full fight in him anymore, especially at age 39 with everything he's been through. The final three rounds was fun. I wish it would have started off like that. But it was a great card from top to bottom. But Jake gets the win. And what did you make of it? Do you see any improvements? What do you take away from this Jake Paul performance?
I actually do see some improvements in Jake. I thought his last two performances were a big regression. He did not look good in the Mike Perry fight. He looked very, very sloppy. He didn't look good in the Mike Tyson fight. He was flying all over the place. He didn't want to engage. He was trying to keep distance, but didn't really know how to. This fight, a lot better. I mean, he literally had a punching bag in front of him. But closing the distance behind the jab, His punches look strong. He's generating nice right hooks to the body, right hands upstairs. Chavez shows the only thing that he has is a chin. It's the only thing he's got at this stage of his career. He doesn't have the output. He does not have the desire. I don't know how he keeps getting chances and shots, how he talks himself into these fights, but the guy doesn't show up. He doesn't show up either.
I interviewed him. Well, he does not talk. Yeah. I don't know. He gets it because of his name, his last name. That's really it.
This guy's living off of his dad to this day. I mean, 40 pounds above where he was world champion. You know, he was decent at 160. He was world class there, but he hasn't been there in a very, very long time. But yeah, I think you can't really knock Jake. He did what he did with what he had in front of him. But yeah, once Chavez actually started letting his hands go a little bit in rounds 8, 9, and 10, shit, this is actually a fight. A fight broke out. And I think most judges actually gave Chavez 2, if not 3, of those last rounds, because one judge had it 97-93, one judge had it 98-92, and I think 99-91. So, you know, when he did do work, it was obviously effective.
Yeah, I thought his jab was something that really caught my eye. And I was ringside, and I saw a real commitment to the jab, which is not an easy, like, that's I know it's the most important punch in boxing, but you can look silly in there if you don't have a jab and the proper footwork. I saw good footwork. I saw, looking for positives here, I saw a good footwork. I saw a jab, power shots when he landed a nice uppercut. His power shots were crisp. Yes, he was doing it against a guy shelling up, which actually makes it quite harder to land some of these shots. But like, go back to Chavez. Like, what's the most famous Chavez fight? In my opinion, it's the Sergio Martinez fight, where he was getting his ass kicked for 11 rounds and then woke up in the 12th, nearly stops Sergio, a la...
He like dropped him twice, I think. Had him all over the place. That fight was sick.
All over the place. One of the most dramatic 12th rounds I've ever seen. It looked like his dad when he fought... what slipped my mind? I shouldn't have brought up that example when I'm jet-lagged.
Meldrick Taylor. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Yes, it looked like that. But not as dramatic was Chavez's... he awoke in the 7th, 8th round, made it a fun night. Fans were left happy, I think, overall. But we go to afterwards. Jake Paul goes in the ring. And this is like kind of like the most fun part, in my opinion, is when he starts calling people out and they start talking about what's next. Because a lot of what Jake Paul is these dream fights, these exhibition-type fights, these crazy names and things you would never think are possible, but they are possible because when you generate as much interest and money as Jake Paul does. So after the fight, Jake Paul mentions Anthony Joshua, Gervonta Davis, Zerto Ramirez, Badu Jack, and Tommy Fury. That is a collection of names. Never, I don't think in the history of boxing have we ever heard a call out of Anthony Joshua followed by Gervonta Davis.
Yeah, guys who are 100 pounds apart. But this is what Jake does, though. He's clickbait. This is what he's made his career on. He'll say the most outlandish things because it'll get the clicks. It'll make clips. That's what it's for. But as you said, because of the money behind him now, he can actually make some of these fights happen. Listen, is he going to fight Anthony Joshua? No. I mean, no.
Really? I kind of think he will.
I don't think so. I don't care what stage of Anthony Joshua we're looking at. You're going to get hurt if you're fighting Anthony Joshua. I know we talked about all the positive things about how he looked against Chavez. There was a lot of glaring negatives too. You can't put yourself in the same discussion.
Well, what are some of the negatives? Because I thought his stamina, like he threw 50 punches around, which is a very good number, but I thought like there were moments where he looked a little gassed.
Yeah, he got super gassed late, which happens in every fight. He flies in. I know we're talking about his jab, but like he flies in with these looping shots. You can't do that to guys who are crisp and sharp punchers. You can do that to Chavez Jr. You can do that to a 60-year-old Mike Tyson. You cannot do that to an Anthony Joshua. He flies in. His footwork, I know you mentioned his footwork looked good. It didn't look good. He is not closing the gap deceptively. And when you have a guy who has his hands up, you know, there's not a lot of openings. Not a lot of openings if you're not deceptive. There's not a lot of openings if you don't know how to set things up. So he's still lacking a lot of higher level boxing IQ. So when you start throwing out names like Anthony Joshua, any kind of dangerous heavyweight, I mean, that's crazy to me. Go, dude, you got to fight Tommy Fury. Go beat him. Go back and beat him. Get that off. Get that win back. Which I think he probably could win that fight now. He's learned a lot since that fight, and Tommy hasn't really done anything. But Anthony Joshua, dude, that's leave that one alone.
I think you should fight Tommy Fury next. It has all the making. It has everything. It has the grudge match. It's a rematch. It's a quote unquote real boxer in Tommy Fury. If you want to talk about getting these title shots, if you want to talk about fighting legitimate fighters, start with Fury, avenge that loss. It's also a money fight too. Avenge that loss, make some money. It's a commercial fight. And then on top of it, then you could say, listen, I avenged my only loss. I beat a quote unquote real fighter in Tommy Fury. Then you can start building towards some of these other names that are out there. So I believe the Tommy Fury fight should 100% be next. That's on Tommy. What I've heard all weekend is he's very, very unrealistic with his demands. And it's like, bro, what are your options, Tommy? Like, you've completely fallen off. You beat KSI and Jake, which is in the crossover world, that means something. But since then, you've done nothing to maximize your profitability, maximize your name. So, you know, accept the terms, fight Jake. If it's overseas in the UK, I think it'd be huge. If it's here in the States, it'll be big as well. So I think that's it. Zerto Ramirez gets the win, which we'll talk about in a second, but he comes into the post-fight presser. I'm in that little room and they're talking about this fight all like for the last couple of weeks, like Oscar's hyping it up. Zerto unified cruiserweight champ, Jake fighting on the same card, blah, blah, blah. And we're in this tiny little presser room, and Zerto comes walking in, and it's the first time I've actually spent a lot of time around Zerto Ramirez. The guy does not give a damn about promoting himself, does not want to talk to media, doesn't care, still has 4 million Instagram followers, which I was shocked by, doesn't like care to play the game at all, like didn't even want to come to the post-fight presser, even when he could have had a chance to call out Jake Paul, or just doesn't care. And that's something that Nikisa said in the post-fight. He's like, we would love to fight Zerto one day, but that guy doesn't promote himself at all. But they do a stare down, which was kind of crazy. And I'm like, what is this? So, like, that is a fight that could be out there, is Jake versus Zerto, which would be for a unified title. Some things would have to happen there. Jake would have to be ranked in the top 15, which WBA and WBC said they are willing to do, whether you think that's right or not. I mean, this is boxing. Crazier things have happened. Would you be shocked? Jake Paul was ranked in top 15.
Not at all. Not at all. These governing bodies are incredulous. They don't care. They see dollar signs. They'll throw him right. They'll throw him in the top 10. Watch, and he'll be able to jump right into one of these fights. But that's neither here nor there. Zerto. I like Zerto. I kind of like that he doesn't want to do media either. He's just like, I just go out there and I fight. And he's very workmanlike in the way he goes. He fights really tough guys every time, door to close being another one. But man, I want to see him with Opatai before anything. I don't want to see him with Jake yet. You know, I want to see that Opatai fight. I think that's the best fight that can be made. It's one of those. It's the perfect 1-versus-2 matchup in a good division of really tough guys. That kind of matchup is good for the sport. If he wants to fight Jake after that, sure. I mean, whatever. I'm sure they can make that fight happen. But yeah, I agree. Jake needs to fight somebody close to his age, someone who's actually ranked, someone who's a contender, perhaps, who's in the running, not digging people out of their grave. So, you know, they have a name recognition like Mike Tyson and Chavez Jr. But the guy's still progressing. And like you said, with the governing bodies, they'll put him somewhere. They'll find a spot.
Yeah, that's the next one. We'll see how that shakes out in the next couple of days, if they actually go through with what they said. But yeah, 13 fights for Jake. And if you strip away the celebrity, strip away his name, and you look at 13 fight prospect going up against a 60-fight durable gatekeeper, if you take away Chavez's name.
Former world champion.
Well, gatekeeper maybe probably isn't a former world champion, maybe. Like a Tevin Farmer probably could be a gatekeeper if he wants to stick around. But if you strip away all the celebrity from Jake, and he's a 13-fight novice, 13-fight prospect, and then he's going up against a durable 60-plus fight guy. I mean, we've seen this in boxing before.
Yeah.
Like we've seen, and the fights usually play out like we saw on Saturday night. Maybe the gatekeeper gives a little more resistance, but gives you rounds, and it's a learning experience for the 13-fight prospect. That's what happened on Saturday night in the main event. It just happens to be that it's Jake Paul, who is very, very explosive, who is very, very controversial, who is getting massive paydays. It's kind of like skirting the whole business of boxing, flipping it upside down. So then you're going to have people that are upset. You're going to have people that are screaming rigged, rigged. I mean, the amount of tweets I read that the fight was rigged on the flight home to the point where now Jake wants to press charges against Piers Morgan. He wants to press charges against anyone that says this fight was rigged. Like, I don't, like, it's, they're not rigged. Like, the fights are not rigged.
The fight was not rigged. This, you brought up how Chavez Jr. has fought in the past. Under the bright lights, the guy keeps his hands in his pockets. He just doesn't throw punches. It's not rigged. Yeah, did he look like he's going out there to spar? Yeah, he's 39 years old and he barely fights. So the guy's not going to come out there and be a world beater again all of a sudden when he's 40 pounds heavier than when he was actually good, when he's 10 years, 15 years removed from when he was actually good. It was a 39-year-old guy getting off the couch who, under the bright lights, doesn't throw punches. It's not rigged. That's just the way Chavez Jr. fights. Sorry, guys.
In addition to like rigged allegations, like you gotta get like you're now talking about like commission, the California State Athletic Commission. It's one of the strictest commissions in.
That's a federal crime, dude. That's a federal crime. Rigging a sporting contest is a federal crime. People are going to jail for this for a long time.
So you're telling me that the California State Athletic Commission, all those guys are willing to put their freedom on the line so Jake Paul can have a rigged fight with Julio Cesar Chavez?
I don't think so.
Or do you want to say that, oh, it's in the contract that Chavez can't throw punches? No.
That allegation has been going around for a while with different fights. Like, so many knuckleheads were going to me like, I heard Mike Tyson can't throw an uppercut. It's in the contract. Shut up. The guy's 60. We're not handcuffing him. There's no contract saying he can't throw punches.
It's prize fighting. Jake Paul is a prize fighter. Just like Mayweather was a prize fighter, you pick and choose your opponents. It's shrewd matchmaking. They found a guy with a name, with a fan base, who has a glimmer of hope, and they put him in the ring in a big money fight, and it turns out that what they thought, like he's not going to be that much of a threat. He could give Jake some issues. That's what it came out to be. That's what we saw in the ring on Saturday night.
It was good matchmaking. Yes. At this stage of a prospect's career, which is what Jake is, these are the kind of fights you look for. So in the beginning, I'll say it like this. I remember back in my day, the way they used to build fighters is a certain way. And they're kind of following the old school script. It's like you get out there, you get that scrappy first win, like the Gibbs fight, whatever. Yeah, and then he fought a bunch of like really just showcase fights to make money against other name guys from different things. But whatever, that is what it is. That's because of his name. But then he started fighting some those other actual boxing guys. But they were handpicked opponents, just like most people when they're coming up in their career. And then you step up a little bit. You fight the guy who's like a 50-60 pro. Usually that guy's like 12-40. Like everyone has those guys on their record. But they're tough. They're scrappy. They give you rounds. They test you a little bit. That's exactly what Chavez Jr. was. Yeah, he's a former world champion. But like, dude, it was so long ago and so many weight classes ago. I look at him more as one of those 12-40 guys who's going to go the distance, who's going to be there, who's going to throw some kind of trickiness in there. But you learn from it. You move on. It makes you a better fighter. This is part of the process.
Yes, exactly. It just happens to be that he's Jake Paul, and he is.
And it happens that it's Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. It's both, because they're both basically celebrities. Chavez Jr. is a celebrity. He's not a fighter anymore. So, you know, they're just meeting now at this point of their careers.
Virgil Ortiz tweeted some crazy stuff, like, so kind of like out of line for him. Like, this was Jake Paul is single-handedly destroying the sport of boxing. Like, bro, that is a dramatic assessment. Like, there are 10 to 15 things that are destroying boxing.
I was gonna say, there's a bunch of people destroying boxing.
There are like, yeah, okay, I'm not gonna get into exactly what I think, like, but there are 10 to 15 things about this sport right now that are troubling, that are destroying it, and Jake Paul is not one of them. You know, he I don't understand, what's the scam part? Like, Pete, you're not, no one's putting a gun to your head to order these fights. You're ordering them because you want to watch them. You're ordering because you want to see a Dorticos versus
Ramirez.
You want to see Floyd Schofield in a 50-50 fight we thought was a 50-50 fight.
That was a great card. It's a really
great card, top to bottom. Where's the scam? Like, the scam would be like if you were promising something, like if you were a boxing fan, you kind of knew what this main event was going to be. And you're also like, oh, the main event, the undercard is good. And we'll see what happens in this Jake fight. We'll have a good laugh, or we'll hate watch it, or we hope he gets knocked down, or we'll get pissed off at the end. Like, I don't understand the scam part of it all, because if you have eyes, like, you should be able to figure out what this is, what's going on here, and how this career is being built. So didn't quite understand the whole scam part of all this.
Guys, this is a free market, and Jake is good at making money. He's good at capitalizing on the media and social media and whatever celebrity that he's been able to develop over the years. It's just another movement for him to do that. And I've said this before. It's kind of like putting Butterbean as the main event. Like, yeah, Butterbean was entertaining as hell. He was put on all those cards for a reason. Like, you're going to see a good knockout. You're going to see, you know, it's not a high-level, super high-level fight. but it's a good fight and people are going to tune in to watch it. That's kind of like this. They just were putting it on the main event because that's the guy where all the money's coming down from. But the rest of the card, and you said top to bottom, it's really bottom to top. The rest of the card was really damn good. And there was a lot of really important fights on that card. And there has been on all of these cards lately. MVP, yeah. I think, is actually doing a really good job because they're also utilizing Jake's celebrity to promote these fights. So these fighters are getting so many more eyes on them. They're also getting way more dollar signs in their pockets. So, yeah, like you said, where's the scam? I don't know. People are going to be butthurt because of how he's doing it. But that's just, it is what it is. It's a free market, man. If you can find a way to make money, people will.
Yes. And to put a button on this, I do work for MVP, full disclosure. But I chose to work.
I do not.
I chose to work with MVP for a lot of the reasons that you just listed. Like, the Jake Paul aspect of MVP is a very small part of what I actually do at MVP. I called a few of his fights. For this week, I was doing social media with them and interviewing fighters and stuff like that, which I had a blast doing. For the most part, I call their club shows, their prospect mm-hmm. shows, which there aren't a lot of promotions doing right now. They don't make a lot of money, if any, on these club prospect shows. They're building up young local talent in the Florida area and all across the country and even the world now on some of these cards, giving them a platform and letting them put their career into their own hands. I think that is really good. They're investing in women's boxing. Like, we have a card coming up in July 11th on Netflix, all women's fights, unified fights, undisputed fights. Like, when has that ever happened? They've signed every woman boxer that's worth something to MVP. And they've also worked with a lot of different promoters. Like, for this one, they worked with Golden Boy, and they're willing to make big events, and I like being part of big events. So, you know, I think that they're – like, Jake kind of takes up a lot of the attention, and a lot of it's negative. But there are a lot of good people that work at MVP that actually love boxing and are building it the right way and putting on really good events, putting on these opponents. Like, Floyd Schofield gets this knockout of Tevin Farmer. Like, would this gotten the same amount of attention if it was on, like, a Golden Boy card in Fantasy Springs, like, on a Friday night on DAZN?
In the boxing world, yes, because it's a big deal because everybody knows what Tevin is. But
it added more. No. Yeah, of course, but it added more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, but also, it's a big event. Like you said, you like being part of this was a big event. So that fight actually got to happen on a big event and not in, like, a 1,500 person arena, you know, that it probably would have landed on some Golden Boy card somewhere. So now it's a big stage and a young guy like Schofield, who now has that experience fighting a very tough, tricky guy who's supposed to give you trouble under the bright lights and a big stage, and he goes out there and performs. Dude, that fight's going to make him so much better. That experience to go out there. I saw your interview. That was a superstar performance. Absolutely it was. Superstar performance. Tevin Farmer gives everybody hell. You blasted him out in the first round. 3 knockdowns, 90-second fight. I mean, stellar. Walk off KO. I mean, it was awesome. Like, really, really, really impressive. I hate to see my man Tevin go down like that, but listen, us older guys, you keep fighting these young bucks, you're going to run out of time. You're going to run out of time. You're going to run out of time.
Yeah, he did. That was awesome. Floyd Schofield won the night, in my opinion.
Performance of the night by far.
You got the performance bonus from Jake.
Nice.
It was awesome, man. I was on the apron for this fight because I was super excited for this one. This was the people's main event. This was the one it was hotly contested pre-fight stuff. They're going back and forth. You got
Farmer. Dude, why was it so early on the card?
I have no idea. I have no clue. This should have been co-main. You have Farmer coming off of 3 good performances, albeit it was 0-3 in his last 3 fights, but the Murataya fight and the 2 Zepeda fights, his stock was high again. Like, people were talking about Farmer was going to school kid Schofield, take him to school. And you have Schofield, who we just don't know who he is. He pulls out of the Shakur fight. His dad is always chatting for him, but he has this raw, explosive talent. We just don't know how good he is because we just simply have not been able to watch him perform. So all that being said, I'm on the apron, bro. I got my phone out. I'm, like, ready to go. And, like, I blinked, and, like, the fight was almost over. Like, it was a stunning shot on the chin. Like, jaw-dropping type of shot where everyone ringside was like, whoa. And then he follows up on it, gets the stoppage. No one does that to Tevin Farmer. And you're right. I was able to follow him back into his locker room. And that is, like, one of the coolest parts of this job. And just, like, the coolest part of what you guys do is the euphoria and, like, excitement of the team walking back to the locker room, then getting back into that locker room. Because beforehand, I was in the locker room too, and it was dead silent in there. Mm-hmm, and it was like all that like nervous energy. And I'm trying to interview him, and like I don't like doing those because they're so fucking awkward, and like these guys don't want to talk to me. Afterwards, they want to be your best friend. Yeah. And he's still like excited, but also upset. He had tears in his eyes because Tevin. I didn't realize that they were such good friends. And he's like, I feel so bad that I had to do that to Tevin, which I think came off pretty well to fans out there, because this kid did not have a good like. You know, everyone was still dogging him about the Shakur thing, but yeah, I mean that is unreal performance from Schofield. He can. I mean, the world is oyster right now, 135, because that's how you make noise. And you know, that's how you get the attention of boxing in a really good division.
And it's a really good young division. So, you know, you got Abdullah Mason, who's about to fight for a world title. You've got Raymond Mordetaya, who just got elevated to the IBF strap. You know, these guys now, Schofield is a major player now. He's right there. He's one of these guys now that could be vying for these world titles. Very, very good young division. And I don't know, man. These guys are hungry. I feel like they're going to fight each other. We're going to see a lot of these fights happening. I mean, 135 is hot once again. It has been for so long. Like this is like a perennial hot division, you know, these last bunch of years. And it's a great thing because I always like 135 because it's like, listen, everything under 30 and under, once you get to 35, it becomes different. The guys just hit harder. That's like the power differential from 30 to 35 is a big jump. And you see it. And it's one of the reasons why it's always been such a popular division. Also, one of the original divisions, lightweight, 135. So there's a history there as well. But yeah, man, I think Schofield, obviously the outcome of the fight, obviously who it was against, because context matters. But then what you said, I thought the interview afterwards was like really touching and showed his humanity. Like, man, I like this kid. It's hard not to hear that interview. Be like, this kid's respectful. He does what he has to do. He's a killer in the ring, but outside, he's a gentleman. I love that kind of stuff. So I thought, I mean, that kid won all up and down that night. He is the performance of the night, the interview of the night. I think he did it all.
Yeah, and you know what? His dad, who I got to talk with a little bit, you know, he has a bad rap as well because he's like one of the most egregious boxing dads. But I watched him. I was keeping an eye on him in the locker room after. He was in the back. He was literally looked like such a proud dad. He let his son talk. He was literally away from it. He didn't do any. He didn't jump in any interviews. He wasn't jumping around. He was literally in the back. And this is just from what I saw. I could be wrong. Who knows if he's going doing podcasts this whole week and going to start saying some crazy stuff. Wouldn't be shocked if he went out there and started making demands to fight this guy and that guy and all that. But from what I saw in the moment, he let his son have his moment. And the kid, like Schofield, like. You know, I'm gonna let my dad talk for me for the most part. And then in the interview, he's like, I'm gonna let Oscar, you know, Oscar said, was this a star making performance? He goes, well, Oscar said so. I'm like, well, what do you think? Like he very much puts his career into the hands of either his dad or Oscar. So I really wanted to know what he thought. And he said, obviously, yeah, it was a star making performance, but I'm really thinking about Tevin Farmer. But yes, I think overall, everyone came away from that. All fans were like, damn, I like this kid. He's powerful. He could be a good next name at 135. And going back to your point on 135, it's like, think of all the greats that have fought there. It's almost like you pass through 135 to move up. Like Duran, Pacquiao's fought at 135, Mayweather, De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, who was in attendance. Just go up and down the list. And then present day, all the guys that we watch now at 140, 147, at one time fought a Crawford. I just watched Crawford. It was an anniversary of him sending Gamboa spinning around the ring at 135. And that was crazy to see Crawford that tiny. So it is a division that keeps on creating talent. And like 147, which we'll talk about in a second, like with Norman and Haney, like there's been nothing in that division for like 2-3 years now. Like, where's the talent there? And then we're lucky with some of these other divisions, like when Abdullah Mason comes through, or Raymond Mordetaya comes through, along with the older guard that's stuck around 135. So that's cool to see. Like, now Schofield can put his name in that list. And I think Schofield versus Abdullah Mason, like, they're on a crash course now.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what I was just saying about these young guys. And these guys need dance partners. And we're going back to the old guard where guys fought each other young. And I think we're seeing that people are more willing to risk their O. So I think that we could potentially see that fight coming up soon. And you've got all those undefeated guys. You've got Mordetaya, you've got Schofield, you've got Abdullah Mason. You know, all those guys got O's. So
you're forgetting Shakur and Tank.
They're elevated. I don't see them tangling with these young.
You say upstarts. they're in another stratosphere.
Yeah, they're
almost like they should fight each other.
They're in a different place, and they're like the super fight level division where they're going to have to fight each other. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to look to fight those smaller guys or those younger guys. The money's not really there for those fights. So, Turkey changes everything.
Dude,
so.
Schofield was supposed to fight Shakur Stevenson. I know he wouldn't have won that, but like, how would that have looked? And I know Triangle Theory doesn't work in boxing. So, Tevin Farmer fights Zepeda 22 tough rounds, and Zepeda gets dropped by him. Can't stop Farmer, does not do what Schofield did. Schofield drops him and stops him in a minute and 30 seconds. So I know I don't really subscribe to the triangle theory in boxing, but you know, you can only compare who these guys have all fought and all that. So like Schofield and Shakur will be talked about because Shakur is fighting next week. And when I interviewed De La Hoya ringside, you know, he had his talking points all ready to go. He goes, I think I'll put him in there with Zepeda and or Shakur winner. So he'll get thrown into those discussions, but ultimately you're right. I think they'll avoid Stevenson. I think Tank, Roach, and Stevenson are at the big fight level. And you can say that about Roach because of the performance that he had against Tank, and they're going to tangle up again on August
16th. He's in that room now.
And he's a lightweight too. Like Roach is not going to fight 130 anymore. Like this guy is going to be fighting 135. That's just what I think. But Schofield did the damn thing, and that was unbelievable to see. And I hope he tangles up with an Abdullah or what's his name? He fights with on MVP Body. Lucas Body. Body versus Schofield could be a good fight.
Body's still undefeated. He has that big knockout win. He's had a couple tough, rough goes the last couple fights, but it's still good sterling record. Two young guys, hungry guys, punchers. I like it.
Punchers. That I can see something like that. I don't see Schofield rushing into something huge. Like that's not good career movement as well. As much as we want to see that, and as much as the boxing landscape has completely changed with Turkey coming into the fold, where he's just looking at names and look, I'll throw you this amount of money, and all of a sudden, you know, Floyd Schofield's fighting on a massive card in Saudi Arabia. Like that would not shock me at all. But I don't know. I don't know what goes on with Golden Boy in Turkey. I don't know what their relationship is. But one thing's for sure is Floyd Schofield is now a player at 135. Zerda Ramirez versus Dortikos. Weird fight. Like, grueling at times. Also, like, completely boring at times. Like, it's my first time watching Zerda up close. He's, like, he looks so plodding and, like, almost he's fighting in slow motion. The guy could take a punch. The guy can deliver a punch. He can walk you down. Dortikos, tough as hell at age 39. Fun fight at cruiserweight. Left a little bit to be desired. But Zerda is just like, I feel like he's a guy that's just fine with getting the W. Just give me the W, give me my check, and I'm going home.
He's a lunch pail guy. He's a workman. He shows up. He does the work. He pounds the steel. And he moves on, takes the win. But he's really difficult to deal with because the guy does not get tired. He's a really good body puncher. His chin is ridiculous. Dortikos can punch. You nail Joe Dortikos. He's a guy I've been watching for a long time. I remember him from the Super Series back in the day when Gassiev actually knocked him out in the last round. But Dortikos is even at 39, you could see he can punch, dude.
Dr. KO.
And I think that affected Ramirez in this fight because Ramirez does get hit. He has a porous defense, but you can't get hit by big, big punchers like that over and over and over again. So I think he was a little more cautious than usual. So the fight wasn't as entertaining as Ramirez Zerda fights usually are. Like his last fight was awesome with Billiam Smith. That fight was great, back and forth. But you know, Ramirez ran away with it. Zerda was just too busy. This fight that never really happened, although he did down the stretch be more dominant. But I think it's because Dortikos can really punch, and I think Ramirez is being cautious not to get hit with too many of those big shots. Even though he did test that chin, but all in all, good fight. Just Dortikos, I think he's 39 years old and hasn't been in a lot of long fights lately. Been a little bit inactive, so Zerda had the advantage in terms of the output and fighting 12 rounders. And like you said, he doesn't care. He goes out there, he gets the win, 12 rounds, knockout, whatever, doesn't matter. Get the win, but it's still a good win because Dortikos is a top flight guy, and have him on your record is a big deal.
Yeah, it was like sloppy at times. There was a lot of low blows, a lot of fouling. I don't know, like Zerda, like I see a lot of holes. in his game. Like, I think Opetaia, there was like this back and forth where even Zerto told me in an interview, like, you know, Opetaia, like, he fights cans, he'd say. Like, he did say, like, one disparaging thing this week, and he's like, Opetaia doesn't fight anybody. I think Opetaia is the class of cruiserweight. He's just faster, more, a little more explosive. Yeah. Like, Zerto brings something different to the table, for sure. That's, they're definitely one and two. There's no doubt about that, cruiserweight, because Battle Jack is up there in age. Dordicos was, like, in quasi-top five-ish type of guy. So, like, to me, it's Opetaia's number one, Zerto's number two. Like, they need to fight. We need to get that unification at cruiserweight. They're both kind of under, like, the... They could fight in Riyadh in November. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't super impressed with Zerto. And you got to figure, this is his third weight class, 34 years old. Like, I don't know why I was expecting him to be on, like, the balls of his feet, like, dancing around in there. That's just not who he is. But, like, watching him up close, that closely, I was like, wow, this, you know, he is very deliberate.
Yeah, but he's like the tide. You can't stop him. It's just like impending doom. He's just creeping up. He's creeping and getting in your face and pounding your body. He's a tough guy to do with. He's big. They said that he was going to rehydrate to like 215 or something like that.
They said he was 220. He looked so much bigger than 220.
Yeah, and he comes down from even heavier. So he's a really, really big guy. You got that guy. He's big. He's in front of you. He's got a good chin. He throws a lot of punches. He's a good body puncher, really good body puncher. He's got a good jab. He's also a southpaw. So, yeah, there's a lot of things about him that make him difficult. But, yeah, he's not one of those guys you're going to watch in, you know, a couple rounds and be like, wow, this guy's a, you know, blowing my mind like an Opetaia. Opetaia is like, he's so dynamic and special. It's a very, very different fights. But listen, that's boxing. They could match up. Ramirez could still win. I think Opetaia is going to win. I favor him, but I don't think it's an easy fight or a foregone conclusion at all.
No, I definitely think it would, stylistically, that is a great fight. Like, that's Opetaia is ferocious, fights way different than Zerto. They got to tangle up. There's no one else out there for these two to fight besides each other. Holly Holm picked up a win in her return. That was fun to watch. She was cool to hang out with all week.
She looked good.
She did. She was fighting Yolanda Vega, who was an undefeated Mexican fighter. Not a lot of pop. Holm, she's just got the muscle memory, man. Like, she said she trained the entire training camp barefoot.
Yeah,
I saw and that. Treated almost like an MMA type of. And only the last week or two, she started sparring and putting gloves on. And you have as much experience as she does in kickboxing, MMA, and boxing. Like, I actually thought like Vega could win heading in. I was thinking about putting some money on it because it was some great value there. And I was kind of overlooking Holm being out of the boxing ring for 12 years, being 42. But, you know, she just showed why she's like a Hall of Famer in multiple sports.
Well, I mean, she was a boxer first. What does she have, like 30-plus pro boxing fights? So she's got way more boxing experience than she does MMA experience. And she was a world champion and beat some really, really top-flight females in her day. But also, MMA training is boxing has evolved. So it's not like she's completely foaming off the couch. She's been punching and striking. I train with a lot of MMA guys over the years. I've seen them. So they will work just their hands very often. They have a boxing coach. Even though they're kicking and throwing and doing takedowns, most of them will go to boxing gyms and train with boxing coaches. So it's still an aspect of their sport. So it's not that far removed for her to think like, oh, if she can come back and do what she does, because she is such a high level fighter. Also, she's going to be in fantastic shape. She's huge for the weight class. Big, long, strong. It's all there. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought that was a really dangerous fight to come back with an undefeated Mexican girl for your first fight at 135. Very impressive. She still got it.
She still got it. It was awesome to see. That was cool. People were excited for that. And I think MVP is going to look to try to pair her with Stephanie Hahn, who's the world champ at 135. She is going to come back this summer and fight. And then we could see Holly Holm go for a world title, which would be a great story. That's it for that card. It was an interesting week out there in Anaheim. Caught up with Oscar. Played a little factor cap. It's currently about like 1.5 million views. Anytime me and Oscar do content, it blows up because I know exactly what to ask that guy. And he's always willing to give a straightforward answer. Just hanging out, seeing Oscar all week was interesting because he's crazy, man.
Oscar rules. He's so awesome. He is the gift that keeps giving in this sport. He's so ridiculous. He's so over the top. He's so different than he was when he was fighting. But I don't know, man. He's a guy. He's the golden boy. No matter what he does, it's gold. It's whether it's good, bad, or anything in between. He is a content creation king.
He's an experience, and he's now going at it with Ryan Garcia. They are trading some pretty nasty barbs back and forth, pictures on the internet.
It's been a while since they've done that. It's been a while since they had a falling out. So it's about that time. It was on my bingo card, so I'm not that surprised.
They're like a toxic couple. They're like 100%. Ronnie from the Jersey Shore, and Sammy Sweetheart. Like, they might get along for a little bit, play nice, but you know, at any moment it can explode like a volcano. And it's right now it's raining ash and lava. Well,
it tends to happen when you have two tens. You got a hot guy and a hot girl dating. It's like, yeah, there's gonna be a lot of friction. It's gonna be a lot to view. That's basically what they are. They're two, you know, super super good looking studs in their own rights, and you know, they're gonna scrap. And they also have huge egos. You know,
huge Oscar egos,
especially.
Ryan says, I can't wait to go up against you and some of your fighters when I leave Golden Boy, but just like I did in the Duno fight or the Duarte fight. Remember the Duarte fight? They, up on the stage, they were like going at each other, where you almost were like, wait, are you guys on the same team? Like,
yeah.
Like, are you rooting? Like, is Oscar rooting against Ryan here? Is Ryan like, it was very awkward, but that's what makes that interesting dynamic between those two. So we'll see how that shakes out. I don't know what's going to go on with that. Some news broke in the welterweights. Devin Haney will fight Brian Norman for Norman's WBO welterweight title. It's November in Saudi Arabia. Ring Magazine confirmed this. I am just hats off to Devin Haney. He's a guy that's always running towards big challenges. You may not like the way he fights, but you can't deny this guy is willing to fight anybody and willing to take on big challenges. Now it is a full-fledged welterweight, the best welterweight in the world right now, Brian Norman. I'm excited for this fight, and you know, hats off to Devin Haney.
Let's go, man. Let's go. Listen, the fight with Teofimo didn't not happen because of Devin. Let's put it that way. And Devin now is going for Brian Norman, who's coming off a hellacious couple victories where you're like, yeesh, stay away from that guy. Nope, going right to him. I love that. I love when guys have that energy where they're like, oh, that's the most dangerous guy? Cool, that's the guy I'm going to go after. That's the guy I'm going to get. So Devin Haney doing the thing, going for it, taking a big risk, fighting a really, really tough young guy. And that's something that my partner over on ProBox, Paulie Malignaggi, always complains about Devin Haney. He's like, he fights all these really old former champions. Well, not anymore. He wanted to fight Teofimo, you know, next in the fall. Now he's going at the Brian Norman. So these are young, hungry guys, and they're for straps. So let's do it, man. I'm with you. I tip my hat to Devin Haney.
Yeah, think about his resume in his career, which I think is a really strong resume. Like, everything he did at 135, like, you want to like look at Cambosos' wins as whatever, like, he still fought the guy that beat Teofimo. Should he have fought Teofimo?
I was undefeated,
right? Should Haney have fought Teofimo? Yeah, I mean, that falls on both of them. I always blame both parties in some capacity for when fights fall through. Should he fought Teofimo back in like 2018 that I'm talking about? Yes, yeah. But he goes on, he beats Cambosos, he fights Lomachenko, he has tough fights along the way in some of those Linares learning lessons, and I'm probably leaving someone out of his run, whatever. But
it'd be Gamboa. Gamboa was a million years old, but Gamboa, former world champion.
And Prograis too, who at the time...
Prograis 40.
Prograis was faded. It turns out that he wasn't as strong as he once was, but heading into that fight, Prograis was a champ, no? Or was looked at as a...
That's where he picked up the title. Yeah, the first title of 40.
Right. So these are good names, and this is a solid resume. In today's boxing world, those are solid, solid names. But think about the last couple of months with Devin Haney. He fights Ryan Garcia. He gets obliterated and everything that happens with that whole saga. Then he signs on to fight him again in a rematch. Ryan loses. Then he goes, all right, I'll fight Teofimo Lopez. That falls through. And then he goes, okay, I'll fight Brian Norman. Like, how can you knock this guy? I understand the lawsuit and his dad and blah, blah, blah. Because you strip all that away, which is kind of hard to do in boxing. I get it. Devin Haney is like the guy, like, what's good about boxing is like, I'll go fight this guy, I'll go fight that guy. He's getting paid handsomely. I get that. But this is a really good fight. So that's the Devin Haney glazing session, because I know I can see the comments right now. Like, you guys are glazing him. You D-rider. Any grown man. I got called a D-rider yesterday. If you're a grown man and you're saying that term, you need to check yourself.
D-rider. Wow.
I'm not going to say it, Chris.
No. Listen, like exactly what you said. Sometimes you got to give guys props. Listen, we dish it out equally. Good, bad, and everything in between. So, you know, right now, I think I'd like the move. Hopefully this fight happens, because apparently we got a lot of fights that don't happen, even though when they get made. Because I said the same thing about Keyshawn Davis when he was fighting De Los Santos. I was like, I like this. He's going after the guy that nobody wants to fight. But then we know how that ended up. It doesn't make weight. Big debacle. So, yeah, if this fight happens, yeah, then all that praise is gonna still come on Devin. So, but yeah, both these guys taking a risk, and it's going to be a big payday.
So Norman is clearly number one welterweight in boxing right now. Devastating knockout of Jin Sasaki, knockout of Cuevas, a string of knockouts before that. The Santillan win was impressive.
Very impressive.
He's clearly number one at welterweight. But is Haney seeing some weaknesses in Brian Norman? Yeah, he has big punching power, but are there some holes that Devin Haney, the master boxer, can exploit? Can he disarm Brian Norman? Because he's not going to go in there and stop Brian Norman. Can he outbox Brian Norman and take away his biggest strengths, that is the power punch of Norman? That's Devin Haney's path to victory.
Yeah, and also, I don't know what Devin is seeing specifically. I know I've called a lot of Brian Norman's fights on the way up, and he did not look anywhere near like he does now. These last couple of performances have been spectacular, but also you got to look at the opposition and the style of the fighters that he was fighting. Santillan, talk about a lunch pail guy. He's going to be right in front of you. He's going to bang. He's going to throw a lot of punches. Not a big puncher. Still impressive that he did what he did with him. Sasaki, he's a right stand in front of you puncher. So you might have to, they might be have to look beyond these past couple performances and be like, all right, is he really this good, or is his opposition just right for him? Because Devin is not like either one of those guys. And he can move, he's super long, he's got a good jab. So there is pathways to victory for Devin Haney. I'm sure that's what they're looking at. But also, I think there's still a lot of question marks on Brian Norman. It's like, how good is he really? Maybe he is that guy. Maybe he is that good. Maybe he can actually jab and box with a Devin Haney. We'll see. And that's why this fight's so intriguing.
Yeah. I can't wait. And Teofimo Lopez got some egg on his face, because where does he go from? He could have fought Haney. This was supposed to be Teofimo Haney. And and Turkey had to come up with another alternative here. And this is a damn good alternative. Like, and also for Brian Norman, we talk about how we're praising Devin Haney and how he moves. Brian Norman, we were on him real good for what he, the ducking of Boots, and how I thought he mishandled that whole Boots scenario. It turns out that, you know, Boots wasn't so willing to fight the guy, or was, you know, offered him a contract that he had to accept before the Sasaki fight, which didn't make much sense. If that's true, that's what Norman said about all this. So he bet on himself, Brian Norman, to not fight Boots. I'll fight Sasaki. I'll get a nice payday there. And then I will come back and assess the lay of the land. It turns out that Boots moves up to 154 the day before Norman's fight. And now Norman is fighting Devin Haney in Saudi for what is probably a giant bag. So,
and a less dangerous guy than Boots, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So these plans are really rolling out nicely for Team Norman.
So shout out to them. I wouldn't say I stand corrected, but I will give you props. I did give you a hard time. I think a lot of people did, because we thought you ducked Boots. We wanted to see that fight no matter what. But you played the game, and now you're fighting Devin Haney, who is one of the biggest names in boxing, good, bad, or whatever. He's a lightning rod, and people are going to tune in to see him get knocked out. People are going to tune in to see if he could move, if he's going to move around and dance around in there like he did against Ramirez, which I don't think he will. I like this a lot. I wish it was sooner, but we got something to look forward to in November. We can put it on the old calendar, Chris. Deontay Wilder returned Friday night on PPV.com. What'd you think? I thought he looked thumbs down. I thought he looked like his jab was crisp early and it deteriorated. Like, the best thing that came out of it was that he got in the ring, made it to a fight week, made it to a fight night, got a win, and now can figure out what he wants to do next. That's what I took away from it.
Yeah, that's a great assessment. He got in the ring. He got some rounds under his belt. He got a guy who didn't want to fight. He got a guy who didn't want to engage. You know, if you saw him even warming up, he wasn't even throwing punches. He was just trying to avoid and evade. And it's funny.
He was just doing this in the locker room.
Yeah, literally.
Zero punches
thrown. I got asked, like, what should Hernan do? Should go right after him? Like, he goes right after him, he's going to have, like, Robert Hellenius, and he's going to get knocked out in one round. I'm like, but if he old mans it and tries to make it uncomfortable over rounds, that's probably his best bet, to try and make Wilder look bad and maybe get to a decision, which is basically what the guy did. But still, I mean, Deontay was still able to crack him. But, dude, just Deontay, the snap is gone. He doesn't have that whip anymore. That was his thing. He was just this long, athletic, snappy puncher who had this crazy whip on his jab. His right hand came out like his jab was like a slingshot. His right hand was like a catapult. He just had this certain whip to him. I didn't see any of that. Not in his footwork, not in his jab, not in his right hand. Obviously, he can still punch, but I don't know, man. I was hoping for more, but I really, what can you really expect?
Yeah, the left hook looked nice. I mean, yeah, that right hand, he's having a hard time disguising the right, which made him so dangerous in his run, was that he could disguise that right hand with the jab, and it's one of the most powerful right hands, especially when you don't see it coming. Now you can see it coming from a mile away, but the left hook was a nice little
new wrinkle,
something to take away from it. But can he beat anyone in the top five? No. Can he beat anyone in the top 10? No.
But where's Anthony Joshua at this point of his career? Is he still in the top five in that weight division?
Well, we got to see Joshua. He's got surgery, and they're talking about maybe Dave Allen for Joshua at the end of the year, or he was rumored with Big Baby Miller. Like, Joshua's way ahead of Wilder. Like, that's not even a debate. I don't know. I have no idea what to be after Wilder, to be dead honest with you. Like, I want
I still think Joshua fight happens.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, do we have to see Wilder beat someone better than Herndon for that fight? You said you're going to go to South Korea. There's money out there in South Korea against another, like, no-name guy. And then they're going to look at the names in 2026. We'll see how it all shakes out, but...
Keep undefeated until Joshua's ready, and then make that fight. That's if I'm working with Wilder, that's what I'm doing. Keep it undefeated. Finkel. Doesn't matter who the hell he fights. Just keep him kind of busy.
Yeah.
Get a couple fights in, maybe, but just waiting for that Joshua fight, because that's the fight to make.
Another fight this weekend.
Big money fight.
Yeah, I agree. Christian Mabili smokes Galecki. It's the first round.
Super impressive. First round.
Mabili is a guy at 168. This guy's got to get in a big fight. I want to see him against some of the name Resendez. Put him in there with Shiraz, Belonga winner, Canelo, any of those guys. Like, Mabili is must-watch TV. He's the best, most exciting fighter that you probably haven't really watched, unless you're a hardcore. Yeah,
I'm a big fan. I've called some of his fights up in Canada, interviewed him. He's a really, really nice guy. Great team, too. Those Canadians, they're such nice people. And I've spoken ill of his technique in the past. He's a little one dimensional at times. We saw that in the Derevchenko fight, where he's fighting a guy with literally one arm for eight rounds.
That was so annoying because I bet on that one.
Yeah, and it was tooth and nail. You know, you saw some of the things that would be an issue if he fights a guy like Canelo. The leaning over the front foot, the being there to be hit, the, you know, open wide open for uppercuts kind of thing. But he's super exciting. I've never seen him in a bad fight. He's fun to watch. He can crack. He's got a gas tank for days. And listen, was he supposed to beat Sulecki? Yes. Was he going to beat Sulecki? Yes. Was he blowing him out in one round? No. I mean, beautiful combination. Right hand to the body, left hook to the body, and then rips this killer uppercut that splits the guard. And Sulecki looks around like, what the hell just hit me? I mean, super impressive way to finish a fight. Context matters. Who you're fighting matters. How you do it matters. And Billy knocked it out of the park. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was really cool, and it just keeps his stock extremely high. Mabili had a KO loss to Pacheco. Before that, That's it. Yeah, that
was Sulecki. So like you said in Billy, Sulecki had a KO loss to Pacheco.
Yes, thank you. Brain fog due to lack of sleep and too much travel. Pacheco stopped Sulecki. That was the only KO loss of his career, and then Mabili
body shot the second one.
Yeah. So Sulecki was known to be durable, but
he went 12 with Danny Jacobs. He went 12 with Gabe Rosado. He went or 10 with Gabe 36. Rosado. Super. Oh, he went 12 with Demetrius Andrade. Like Sulecki, I mean, he went down a bunch of times, but like he's a durable guy. He went down this time bad.
Before we say goodbye, Conor Benn is fighting Chris Eubank rematch. It's September 20th, not the 26th. It's been announced. Same weight, same clauses.
Wow.
Which makes me like, I feel for Chris Eubank. I know he's making millions. But when I read that, like, I felt like I had to go through it again. I felt that I had to sit in a sauna, which apparently he might have broken some rules. Let him break some rules. This fight, it's not a title fight. It's a grudge match.
Yeah, who cares?
But it's we're going to see it again. And I saw a really cool tweet. Someone said this time they're fighting for themselves. Do you get it?
I get it. I like it.
They're fighting for their dads.
Not fighting for their dads. Because now this fight matters. Like the first fight, people are like, eh. You know, it's kind of a gimmicky fight because it's their sons fighting. But now it's like that first fight was good. Shit. This fight matters. Like these guys are actually put on good shows. So, this was inevitable. We knew this was happening. It's really surprising about the weight though. But again, the contract was set before the first fight. So that's what people are like. I was talking to Paulie about it. He's like, I can't be the same weight. If you're the winner, you got to get, I'm like, no, dude, the contract was signed prior to the first fight for the rematch. So weight's going to be the same.
Right. How does it, if Eubank got his way and was like, all right, the rematch, I get to dictate more of these terms when it comes to weight. Like, what can he possibly do to Ben? Because Ben is just he's a freaking 147 pounder. 140.
Yeah.
I know it's easier to go up than it is to go down.
Yeah. I mean, he could just wield his power of being, you know, the A side guy, the guy who won the first fight and just.
But what weight would they do it at if it was up to Eubank?
162. It's not a, I mean,
find like a better catch weight. Get rid of the stupid hydration clause.
That would be what I would do. I would have pushed for no rehydration.
Or a higher one? 15?
Yeah.
Or percentage, like you always say?
Yeah, percentage. 10%. 10%. Then he would get 16 pounds.
I'm shocked that he didn't try for that. Like,
I'm sure they did, but you signed a contract.
And there is some... I know there's no title on the line. There's a lot of, like, pride, blah, blah, blah. But, like... Eubank wins, like he's in line to fight Canelo. Like no doubt.
He's fighting Canelo.
Only if he wins though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if Eubank and if Ben wins, there are some big fights at 147.
If he can get back down, but also if Ben beats him, they're probably gonna fight a third time.
Yeah, probably.
It's so much money. Like, it's gonna be, and Ben's so young, he can just keep doing these fights, make all this money, and then have another career after this. Eubank's almost done. He's going to have this fight, maybe a third one, maybe a Canelo fight. He's looking for big money out the door. And he's doing it. But Ben has a whole nother career after this. So,
speaking of out the door, that is what we are doing. We're leaving this podcast. We're shutting the door on episode 402 of Inside Boxing Live. Heading into 4th of July. Haven't decided if you want to do a show later in the week. Do we want to enjoy our families and shoot off fireworks, bottle rockets? You know, we have our next episode will be a mid-year award show. We do it every year because it is mid-year, which is crazy. It is July, folks. Rent is due this week. We'll figure it out. We'll me and Chris will convene.
We'll talk amongst ourselves.
We'll talk amongst ourselves. If you get an episode, it'll be later in the week. I'm thinking next week. Enjoy your family time. Enjoy this episode. We'll come back with our next episode is going to be the mid-year award show, and I will put out a Google Doc where you can vote on some of it. You know, mid-year fighter of the year, performance of the year, round of the year, knockout, storyline, all that good stuff. Predictions for the final 6 months of the year in this wild, wild sport. That's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. But happy 4th of July, everyone. Make sure you check out my Instagram. There's going to be a ton of meat, ton of barbecue. Thursday
I'm clipping
be
that. Friday. I'm clipping that out.
Make, ton of meat.
Hey, everybody, check out my Instagram. There's going to be a ton of meat on it. Yo, isn't Joey Chestnut back?
Yes, Joey That's Chestnut huge. Is back. That's we should do an episode on Joey Chestnut.
We should go live. What if we go live on IG?
Oh, I'm doing that. We're doing that.
Live on IG.
Because it's a big deal in my house. We watch Joey Chestnut do the 4th of July.
It should Kobayashi be a big deal in every American's house.
Yeah, you would think. But people are getting soft.
The king is back. The king is back.
The glizzy king
is back. The ratings are going to shoot through the roof. Don't blow your hands off. Okay, everybody. Be safe. Oof. Just eat hot dogs and let the professionals light off the bottle rockets and M80s. And if you do it, don't drink while you do it. But that's the only thing I'll tell you guys ever to do or not to do. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up all the time. Stay out of the DMs. Good night.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.